Welcome to episode 29 of the Views from 314 Feet podcast. My name is Randy Wilkins, and as always, I'm joined by Yankees beat reporter from The Athletic, Chris Kirshner. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm here in Texas for the three-game series against the Rangers. Interested to see what version of the Yankees we see in these three games. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Celebrated my boy's wedding over the weekend, so that was cool.
Nice.
Shout out to Thomas and Melanie for their big day. And then I spent yesterday watching Manchester United look like absolute ass, and then watched the Yankees do the same thing. So, you know, I think I know who Manchester United is going to be this year, as long as they keep their manager. And the Yankees, I have no idea who they are from day to day, just like everyone else. So I think that covers it. We can wrap the episode up now.
Yeah, seriously.
We don't know who the Yankees are after 5-6 months. So that's good.
Yeah, I mean, that game yesterday was bizarre from really both teams. The Cardinals had one of the worst defensive performances I've seen all year, and they still won by a touchdown.
Exactly. The old Rams came back to St. Louis for a day and beat the Giants.
Yeah, I thought Marshall Faulk actually looked pretty good.
He
looked pretty fast on the Yankees infield.
He did. The other guys on the team didn't look so great. They only put up 14, but Faulk looked good. So, yeah, that was an awful game for both sides. I mean, it was just like, you know, trying to out-trash one another. It felt like, just especially on the defensive side, like that was not a as they like to say, a Tom Emanski clinic of defense yesterday. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, I think there was only – I don't have the box score pulled up. I think there was only two errors, but there were balls that just fell in that were scored hits because, you know, defenders didn't touch it or whatever. But, you know, just mental defensive mistakes had to be combined over six for both teams. It was really bad.
Yeah, and it was also we're going to get into Jason in a second, but since we're on this, I know this is something that John Boy has brought up a couple times, and I think he's even brought it up to Aaron Boone directly. But that was the first – and I didn't think it was that big of a deal over the course of the season, and admittedly, maybe I just wasn't paying as much attention. But I did notice it yesterday, and I think throughout the series – when Goldschmidt and Arenado were up especially. But, like, the Yankees' positioning just fell off all series long. It was just, like, guys kept hitting it in the right spot repeatedly, and, like, there was never an adjustment. Like, even the Alex Verdugo ball that dropped in, like, I know that what the catch probability was, but that was, like, a routine fly ball, but it was, like, made worse because they – played win, like, basically, and they had Verdugo playing win and, like, left center for some reason, and, like, he had no shot at that ball, and, like, Arenado and Goldschmidt kept going right by Glaber, who had no shot at these plays either. It was kind of bizarre. That was the first time where, like, that positioning thing, like, really stood out to me.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't lose because of the positioning. I think the Cardinals had 22 total hits yesterday, and as we talked about, the defense was shaky. Soto did not look good at all in right field yesterday. And then the bullpen, I think, gave up like 8 runs. So the positioning, especially with Clay Holmes on the mound, he didn't pitch yesterday. But, you know, if you're throwing pitches on the outside corner to lefties, which Clay tends to do with his sinker, like, you probably would want to shift your fielders that way, because as we've seen over the course of the season, left-handed batters, you know, try to poke the ball to the left side. They're going opposite field against him, and they still haven't adjusted for that. But yeah, there were definitely some plays in Sunday's game where the positioning was off, and the Verdugo play in particular was one. I don't know if it's a pitching thing or a defensive thing or a combination of both, because that ball that Nestor threw to Wynn was on Wynn's hands, and he jammed him, got it off the end of the bat. And, you know, if Verdugo's over, if he's starting off, you know, 10 feet to his right, it's probably the inning is over just because of where he's positioned. You know, he had to run like 100 plus feet for it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was just a weird game. But let's get into the topic of the weekend. September 1st came, obviously rosters expand, and the Yankees had an opportunity to call up Jason Dominguez. And as pretty much everyone who follows the Yankees is well aware, Jason Dominguez is not with the Yankees. He's still in AAA. Duke Ellis was the position player that was called up, along with a group of pitchers and Anthony Rizzo. The Yankees made a bunch of roster moves after Saturday to bring everybody up. So Efros, Marinaccio, Rizzo were called up along with Duke Ellis. And Jason Dominguez remains in AAA. So I know you wrote about it for The Athletic over the weekend. So what are your initial thoughts of the Yankees' decision?
I don't know if I'm surprised by them keeping him down in AAA, just because of the fact that I do believe that they think Alex Verdugo is a good player and he can help them. They have remained in first place with Verdugo as their starting left fielder. So why disrupt something that, you know, is quote unquote good? Whether or not they actually believe that, I don't know. But, you know, their words and actions do align with thinking Verdugo is a quality player for them. So in that regard, I do believe that they think that there isn't an opportunity for Dominguez to play every day. Whether you want to believe that or not, I certainly don't believe that, just because of all the metrics, the eye test, everything would suggest that left field should be a competition and Dominguez should be given an opportunity to win that job this month ahead of October. Basically, you know, going into October, you want the fewest amount of holes or weaknesses possible. That is the goal heading into the postseason. In my perspective, it doesn't seem that the Yankees are doing that with keeping Dominguez down. I have come to the conclusion that it is probably related to his service time. So Dominguez has 32 days of service time. That includes his time spent on the injured list last season. So the threshold for Dominguez to keep his rookie status for 2025 is either 130 career at-bats. I believe he has 35. I don't have his box scores pulled up. I think it's 35. So he has 32 service days. The threshold for service days is 45 days. So if they keep him down in AAA over the next two-ish weeks, they can call him up with 12 days left of the season, and he is still a rookie for 2025. I do think that is factoring in to their equation. I don't know for certain, because that is not something that the Yankees will say, because they would get in trouble if they did say that. So, you know, just not going to know for certain, but it does make sense, because there is certainly, to use their words, a lane for Dominguez to play. Verdugo has 0.2 F4 this season. He's been one of the worst everyday players in Major League Baseball this season. He's been one of the worst hitters. He is a negative on the base paths, and the public defensive metrics are split on him. I think he's been all right. But, you know, just the public defensive metrics are split. He's, I think, fifth in defensive runs saved among all left fielders, and I think 20th in outs above average. You know, just from watching every single game, I think he's been fine. You know, he has a really good arm. Definitely one of the strongest arms for left fielders, but you know, his offense is certainly a problem. That is a hole that the Yankees would have in their lineup in October if he is the starting left fielder. And I do think, as we've said many times on here, I think the potential for Dominguez to be more of an impactful player in October is greater than what Verdugo is currently. So I think it's the I think it's the wrong decision to have Dominguez up. And if it is service time related, I don't know if 12 days is going to be enough for him to be his best version ahead of October. You know, he may get called up at that point and, you know, be given the opportunity over the 12 days to perform. I just don't know if that's enough, because that is a really, really small sample size. And obviously the stakes in October are extremely high. Do you want someone who may play just 12 games of in MLB and learn Yankee Stadium's left field, which is massive, and he hasn't done it? I don't know. I'm very interested to see how they go about playing him if and when he does get called up, just because of the fact that, you know, I do think they believe that Verdugo is a player who can help them in October.
Okay, so I want to get clarification on something, because there's so many things like out there regarding the service time thing. How does his being Jason's IL time this year impact his service time? Is that treated as major league service time, or is that not major league service time?
Yeah, he's not on the active roster right now, so he has unofficially like over 100 days of service time. He has to be on the active roster for rookie status 45 days. He has 32 currently. So, you know, if he's up and healthy and playing, you know, he's getting those, you know, official service days. So that's the 32 number I'm talking about. So he hasn't gained any active time on the roster this year just because, you know, he was recovering from elbow surgery.
Okay. I at this point, I don't know what to think. Much earlier in the season, when people were always asking us about Jason, I said it a couple times here, I believe, but I definitely said it online that I didn't think Jason was going to impact the season at all. I thought that, and especially when the oblique injury happened, I didn't think Jason was going to be a factor this season. And then when the reporting came out, and when the Yankees started talking about Jason's ability to come back and be healthy before September, then obviously that kind of changed the perception a little bit. But I'm going to go back to my original thought that I don't think Jason factors in this season. I don't, between the service time points that you're talking about, and if it is that, I don't think 12 days is enough compared to what Verdugo has or hasn't done over the course of the season. I think he's been entrenched as a left fielder. To give Jason Dominguez a 12-day crash course to get ready for the playoffs in a year that there's a lot of pressure to win a World Series feels nearsighted and doesn't help Jason. And quite frankly, I don't think it helps the team that much, even though Verdugo has been an objectively bad player. I don't see how that helps anybody in that situation. And I've said it for a while now that I didn't think Jason was going to get a lot of at-bats, even if he did get called up. It just seemed like it was very clear that the writing was on the wall that the organization is committed to Verdugo. And obviously, neither one of us agree with that or can, quite frankly, see the reasoning behind it. But that's what the organization has decided. And the tea leaves have been there for a while. And I think in situations where Verdugo over the course of the season was not only performing poorly, but his effort level was inconsistent. And when we had these situations with Glaber, there was punishment and accountability there. And with Verdugo, he was above it. He was treated like he was a core member of the team that had a longer leash than a guy who's, they finished his development and he's been there his entire major league career in Glaber. So I think that that was one indication of where Verdugo stood in the pecking order. I don't know why. You know, there's people have their reasoning. At this point, I don't know why, and it doesn't matter, like, what I think or what the guess is. That's seemingly what it is. And I think Verdugo is your starting left fielder in the postseason. There's nothing that's happened to make me feel otherwise at this point. And if Jason comes up, he might play, but I'd rather play it in the position of being surprised rather than having an expectation at this point with Jason. I think the Yankees, through their actions, have told us what the roadmap is going to be. Do I think that that's the right play? Absolutely not. But they're committed to Verdugo, and, you know, they're going to have to sink or swim with that decision. The other thing, too, that the Verdugo part is its own thing. And maybe the service, this comes down to the service time stuff that you were talking about. So maybe it's really that simple and straightforward. But the thing that I've been thinking about that I have an issue with beyond the obvious and postseason and all that stuff, this just kind of goes against the Yankees' development plan for their players that they feel can help be a part of their new core moving forward. They let Anthony Volpe sink or swim and develop at the major league level. They did that with Austin Wells. Austin Wells, I think, playing last September had a huge impact on his year this year. He understood what it meant to be a Yankee, a major league baseball player. He wasn't facing like the 40-man expanded rosters. He was facing like established, accomplished major leaguers. You know, you're not getting like the 39th man in the 40-man roster. You know, he's facing the AL East and he had his struggles, but I think he learned what he needed to do to be a productive major league player for the Yankees and a team that's contending for a championship. And we're all seeing the benefits of that. They did that with Clark Schmidt. They did it with Luis Gil. Luis Gil was given the rotation spot and they let him pitch and he pitched the entire season. I don't understand why the same can't be true for Jason. Like, this isn't just about 2024. We're presuming that that Dominguez has an inside track to being either the left fielder or the center fielder next year. And you're going to need him if that's the decision that they go with. Why wouldn't you want to help his development, not just for now, but for the future as well, when there clearly is a lane? And it just feels like it's not following the path of the development that they've had for guys that they feel can take the next step in the major league level. So I feel like it's a double whammy that it's not helping the team now potentially, but it's also like not giving Jason the opportunity to understand what it takes to be a Yankee and assume these positions and this responsibility moving forward in the past. So it just feels like it's counterproductive in a couple ways, even beyond just like actual like 2024 performance and what happens with the playoffs.
I mean, that's why I think it's service time related, honestly, because yeah. When I was covering the Hawks, the Atlanta Hawks, I would talk to the GM all the time, and he would say that in 2021, the Hawks made the Eastern Conference Finals. They came two wins short of advancing to the NBA Finals. And he would say that it's hard to, like, in his position, it's hard to like have his heart in it, like on like the daily basis, just because GMs are just so always focused on the future too. Like, it's hard to like live in the moment sometimes. But with the Yankees, obviously, like, the Hawks are different because, you know, they're not a title contending team. That run was unique and special, and they haven't come close to reaching that level since 2021. But with the Yankees, it's different in that the present should be the absolute focus here, especially in this season in particular, just because of the fact that, you know, you do have only 1 year guaranteed with Soto. Who knows what he's going to do? He hasn't, you know, given any indication whether he's thinking of staying or thinking of going, you know, and he's probably not going to. you know, by the time the season ends. So you have to imagine that you only have 1 year of Soto. And I just think that having Dominguez up would be a benefit to the 2024 team. But, you know, if you want to factor in, you know, 25, 26, 27, 28, you know, keeping him down for the next 2 weeks while this team is still in first place, like I can get it from that perspective. But I also think it is a dumb move, truthfully, because he could be impacting the 2024 team and possibly have them help them win a division title. Because the difference between winning a division title and being in the wild card series is huge, because in the wild card series, you're probably going to have to start, you know, Cole game one, and then Cole's probably not going to be available for a couple games into the ALDS. And if you're in the wild card series, you're probably going to Baltimore and having to go on the road. That crowd's going to be into it. You know, it's just not ideal. So like the difference between winning the division and the wild card is huge. You know, the ALDS is five games, and you know, your first two games are going to be on the road. It's tough. Like there's a huge difference with winning the wild card and division series. I've seen some fans be like, oh, like we don't want to get rusty. It's good to be in the wild card. No, it's not good to be in the wild card. I get like teams have advanced to the World Series in the wild card, but you know, that's not what you should want. Like think of it as, would you rather Michael Casper, who is a good follow on Twitter, tweets out a lot of stats, but he tweeted, would you rather have a 100% chance at a 12.5% chance of winning the title, or would you rather have a 50% chance at a 12.5% chance to win the title? Like you would rather have the 100% chance of getting, you know, the 12% chance of winning the title, not a 50% chance. So think of it at, like that. I get like the, you know, you have a few days off, your timing may be off and all that stuff. Who cares? Like you should take a guaranteed bye into the next round in the playoffs. Like that is just common sense in my opinion. But with Dominguez, I am interested to see like if it is service time related. And again, if it is, he's going to play 12 games. I don't know if that's enough. I also don't know if it's worth it to have him on the bench, because everybody's just going to be talking about Dominguez. And if Verdugo hits a ground ball to second base, everybody's going to be clamoring for that. But I do think it is valuable to have Dominguez up because they do think he is part of the future. They think he's a big part of the future. I also just think it's valuable to have him, you know, if it was me running the team, I think it's valuable to have him learn from Judge and Soto up close and see what it's like to be in a division race because, you know, he's 21 years old and, you know, ideally he's with this club for the next 20 years. And learning as much as possible from Judge and Soto in a really tight division race, I think can only help him, even if he's not playing much. And if they don't want to play him over Verdugo, whatever, like that's their decision. I think it's the wrong decision, but I do think there is value there in just learning the daily stuff from Judge and Soto. I think that that has some value.
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally preparing for him to be called up at some point and not be an active impact player for them this year. If you were looking for that, then they would have made the decision to not play the service time game and he'd be playing. Like I just don't see how, and I think what you're saying about the service time is like totally spot on. And if that's the primary factor, I just don't see them benching Verdugo for 12 days and then going into the playoffs with Dominguez. That's just hard for me to kind of wrap my head around based on just what they've done all year. I mean, Verdugo has been Teflon. This is one thing I do believe. I think that they genuinely like Verdugo. I think that what you're telling us is that's how they actually feel. Yeah. And it's like, you got to go by what they're saying and their actions. I think he's the starting left fielder, and he's there, and call Jason up and he'll get some at bats, and then Verdugo play game one of whatever playoff series it is.
The one thing that I'm very curious to see is this kind of happened in 2022, which I wrote about when I wrote about right. the Dominguez thing, is all season long they want to say Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is a really good defensive shortstop. Their internal metrics say he's one of the best, yada, yada. Everybody watching the Yankees knew that was just total bullshit because he never looked comfortable. He was not a good defensive shortstop. Doesn't matter what your metrics say. And if your internal metrics say he's a good defensive shortstop, you should probably rip them up because anyone with eyes could tell that Kiner was not a good defensive shortstop. But besides the point, in September of 22, they call up Oswald Peraza. Peraza is, you know, one of their best prospects at the time. He's thought of to be the starting shortstop going into 2023. Similar position as we are now with Dominguez, likely going to be a starter, whether it's center field or left field next year. Peraza comes up. He doesn't really play that much. I think he only had 12-ish starts. He played a little bit of second base that year as well. But he comes up, and they don't give Peraza really the opportunity to unseat Kiner-Falefa at shortstop. While the playoffs come around, and Kiner is struggling defensively, anybody with eyes and a brain watching this team could, you know, imagine that that would happen. It does happen. And then with their season on the line, they're down 2-1 to Cleveland in the ALDS. Guess who's not playing shortstop anymore? IKF. They put Oswaldo Cabrera at shortstop, who played 28 innings that season for the Yankees at shortstop. And then in the ALCS, Kiner, I believe, starts game one and doesn't look great. And then they put Oswald Peraza. So it was a revolving door at shortstop, which is the most important position in the infield, and you have a revolving door. It made absolutely zero sense. They looked dumb doing it, truthfully, because anybody could see that they should have probably given Peraza, or even if you want to have Cabrera there at short, the opportunity to win the job, and they didn't. I can see this happening with the Yankees in the playoffs with Verdugo. Verdugo goes, you know, 1-for-13 and looks terrible at the plate, is, you know, jogging out ground balls, and, you know, it's like, why is this guy playing? And then their season could be on the line, and you're like, oh yeah, we need a spark now. Jason Dominguez, you're hitting fifth against the Houston Astros. It's like, you could have been doing this in September. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if that comes, if that hypothetical lives out again, because we just saw it 2 years ago.
All right, we'll pick this up right after this break. Okay, we're back. So we're going to pick up this conversation that Chris started with the 22 IKF comparison to 24 and Verdugo and Dominguez. I just want to be clear. I don't disagree with you. I could totally see the Yankees doing that, and it could be 22 part two in 2024. I will say, and we talked about this during the break, I think that they view Verdugo different than IKF, even though they publicly said they like IKF. They defended him in metrics. It feels like a deep love and appreciation for Alex Verdugo. And I'm not sure why that is, but it's very clear that that's how they feel about him. And I don't know if it's the Judge thing. I don't know if it's the Aaron Boone and Aaron Judge thing and like the relationship they've built and the admiration they have for him. It feels like a truly deep rooted appreciation for Alex Verdugo and whatever manifestation that is or whatever reasons they have. It feels like a very strong bond, you know, that goes beyond like IKF. Like, I didn't have that feeling with IKF and the team. Like, he was there, they defended him. It felt like they had to do that, and they came up with some like random metrics that they had to kind of justify it. This feels more like he's our guy, and again, there have been so many moments that they could have held him accountable or benched him for production. I mean, they sat Rizzo, they sat DJ LeMahieu, and they sat Glaber for performance-related things. And the whole time, Alex Verdugo is either just as bad or worse than the guys that they benched for performance. And he didn't hustle, like, repeatedly. Like, we spoke about it on the podcast. After they benched Glaber, he just decided to take a 20-minute jog to first base multiple times the next day. No, and, like, you asked him about it. You asked Boone about it. Boone was challenged about it, and he just kept giving us BS responses. And it was just like, he's Teflon for whatever reason. At this point, it's so late in the season, it's not worth trying to figure out why. It's just what it is. We have to, like, accept it. I totally could see your scenario unfolding, but the thing that is always in the back of my mind is they truly like him. Like, as a player, as a person, I think he is a big part of the fabric of this team for whatever reason. And I have a hard time separating that part from the equation, that they've accepted this for so long. And I know the playoffs are different. And again, I totally can see your scenario playing out. But it's like, he's their guy for whatever reason. And it's just like, I don't see Aaron Boone, who values those things, making those decisions unless Verdugo just totally embarrasses himself. Like, it has to be something extreme for them to start playing that yo-yo game. And then we don't even know if Jason's going to do well. And I don't want to, like, steal your thunder from what you said, but I think you had a good point. And I want to make sure people hear it, that, you know, if Dominguez does play and he goes 0-for-4, they're going to say, well, yeah, look, he's not ready. And, you know, I want to make sure that, like, you can speak on that if that scenario does come up.
I can just see it. They're going to be down 2-1 to whoever. They need a spark. Dominguez is up and hasn't played in 10 days. And, you know, he goes 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts. And they're going to be like, yeah, you know, we thought he could help, and he just wasn't ready for the moment. I you know, if you're a fan and a supporter of this team, like, you obviously don't want that to happen and have that be the excuse. The one thing I would say is if they end up going with Verdugo in left field for October and he falls on his face, not besides the, I'm not making a face plant joke, but if he, I'm not making a,
you can,
but if he falls on his face and doesn't do well, and, you know, Dominguez hasn't played, or he's not even with the team on the roster, they're going to be, criticized. It's going to be vicious because of the fact that, you know, you had September to see what you have in Dominguez. And if they didn't take that opportunity, they're going to be criticized, and by many, many people. So that's why I thought that they would use September as an opportunity to see what they have in Dominguez. But if the service time is a factor here and he's not going to be up for a couple weeks, then again, I don't know if that's enough time to see what you have in Dominguez, because again, I can see the scenario playing out. Dominguez, in those 12 games, you know, doesn't have results. You know, he goes 4-for-30. He's hitting the ball hard, but it's just finding gloves. Same thing with Austin Wells. Like, can you, in April, can you take that into October when he doesn't have results? I don't know. I don't think they would do it, truthfully. But the one other point I wanted to make with this whole thing is if the service time was ultimately going to be a factor for them and not having him up on September 1st, why didn't they try to upgrade left field at the trade deadline? And I'm not saying, you know, they had to go out and trade for someone like Randy Arozarena, who was probably the best left fielder who was moved at the deadline. The Mariners ended up getting him. But why not try to get someone like Tommy Pham, who the White Sox traded? And then if you wanted to play Verdugo fine, but at least you could have a platoon partner for him, because Verdugo's not good against left-handed pitching. Tommy Pham hits left-handed pitching. You know, he's not the same kind of player he was a few years ago. But the Cardinals didn't get him for much of anything, and the Yankees could have easily had him and had a right-handed hitting left fielder, and they could have just split time, but they decided not to do that. So that's the one thing that confuses me about the situation, is they just didn't upgrade left field at all. And again, if this was the plan with Dominguez all along to not have him up, and it's because of the service time, then why not trade for somebody who could play left field? And it didn't have to be a major trade. Like, getting someone like Pham could have helped, especially against left-handed pitching. I don't understand that thinking at all.
I think it goes back to what I keep saying. I don't think an upgrade was necessary in their mind. I think it's either Dominguez or Verdugo. I don't think they view left field as a place for him that needed an upgrade. I mean, I think it was that straightforward. Maybe some of this is just like covering for themselves, because they can't say that this is a service time thing. But they've said for a while now that there was no lane. And I think part of that could be service time, but I also think they believe that. I don't think they viewed left field as a place that needed to be upgraded. I think the rest of us did, but they didn't. I mean, they haven't given any indication that they think left field is a problem. I mean, I'm with you.
It makes no sense.
It doesn't.
It doesn't make any sense. And they're not going to say what they truly believe publicly, but I would love to know just why they believe left field has been a position that doesn't need a daily competition. And even like, they have possible replacements currently on the roster too. Like, you can play Trent Grisham out there. I know he's a center fielder, but you know, he is a good fielder.
I don't think we're going to see Trent Grisham again.
No, I don't. But I'm saying, buried. No, I don't think so either. But like, they could have been playing him in, you know, July or June. They could have done that. Oswaldo obviously has played there. He's hitting, and he's been hitting over the last month. He obviously has experience in left field. They could have tried him out there. You know, Jazz obviously has the athleticism and has played center field for the Marlins. They could try him there and have Oswaldo play third. They just haven't taken any – they haven't gotten it creative at all with trying to see if they can improve the overall makeup of the roster. I don't really understand the thinking with that, because in my mind, as I said at the beginning, you want the fewest amount of holes on your roster heading into October, and they haven't taken advantage of that, because left field is a hole.
Well, this brings me to a transition that I want to make here, just overall about this team. And I think it's something that kind of encapsulates their inconsistent play, especially against teams that are bad or like average at best. And I think it's something that has popped up multiple times over the last couple of years, especially 22-23 and now this year. And it's something that like Susan Waldman brought to the attention of the radio audience yesterday. And, you know, I think it's a valid thing to speak about. And it encapsulates what you were just talking about with handling left field and minimizing holes, the Jason Dominguez situation, and other things that have happened over the course of a season. Do you think the Yankees are operating with enough urgency here? Like, not just from like game to game. I don't mean just on the field, but I mean just organizationally. Like, it just seems collectively that there are moments where they can kind of put their foot on the pedal and they're not. And it's not just like when they're playing bad teams and having that killer instinct, as we talked about for months, like when they played the Reds, they didn't like take care of business and actually did the opposite. This August month, which I feel was wildly disappointing and unacceptable for a team that's supposed to be a title contender. And I think we both think that they are. That August, I think, was in some, it's kind of hard to say this because they had like a that terrible stretch, but I felt like this was that August was just as unacceptable in a different way. Like you have to like take care of business and you didn't. Then the Jason thing. Then it's like the whole conversation about handling the one obvious like weak spot out of your starting nine. There's just, it just seems like there's always an urgency issue. And it just feels like this happens a lot online when like things are so obvious that they don't need to be explained or defended. And they definitely don't need to be debated. Like the sky is blue. You can't debate that the sky is not blue. It's right in front of you. It's there. Like there are just some facts that exist or some things that are happening that don't need to be debated and either need to be addressed or can be left alone. And it just feels like in many cases, there are things right in front of us that we can all see and they're just not addressed. And in fact, we get the opposite where we just get these like very loose, weird, bizarre defenses of things that we can all see. And it just seems to like reflect a lack of urgency that this team should have, not just because of the Soto thing, but they're the Yankees. Like you should be trying to put your foot on somebody's neck at every turn. And it doesn't feel like they're doing that. And it feels like it's reflecting in the play. And even in the comments that they say to you guys after the games.
Yeah, the comments are a separate thing. Yeah, the comments are crazy to me just because of the fact that I know how they would be perceived by the fans. And again, like the go back to the Verdugo quote that he gave after the White Sox loss, saying like it's just another day or whatever he said. I forget, it was a couple of weeks ago, but yeah, it just doesn't seem like they have that that killer mindset that you'd want to have, especially with bad teams. Again, like they should be seeing the Nationals and the Rockies on their schedule and be like, all right, it's time to eat. And they just don't for whatever reason. I don't know if it's a Boone thing or the players just, you know, don't necessarily get themselves worked up over losing a game out of 162. I don't know. But yeah, it's an issue that's popped up over the past several years. It's not just the 2024 thing. So I don't know what the main root of the problem is here, but going 14-12 in August when the schedule was as bad as it was, you know, they lost the series to the Angels. They lost the series to the Tigers, who were playing well. I get that, but it's a series that you should certainly win. You drop a game against the White Sox, which is totally unacceptable. Totally. I don't care that they're also major leaguers. They're barely major leaguers. They're going to be the worst team ever. You have to sweep that team. I'm sorry. So that's a failure.
Some of them are major leaguers by default because they
by default.
I mean,
there's so many major leaguers who are currently in the sport that honestly should not be in the major leagues. Like the league as a whole is watered down. The talent level is watered down. And I can't believe that we're probably going to have two more teams in Major League Baseball at some point in the near future, because the overall talent level across the league is not great. And you're just going to have 52 more major leaguers roaming around who probably shouldn't be in the majors. That's a separate issue. You drop 2 of 3 to the Nationals. There are so many opportunities. 2 of 3 to the Cardinals, who are not a good team. Like, the division's probably going to come down to the 3-game series against Baltimore, and whoever wins that series may end up winning the AL East. But again, you had such a good opportunity of pulling away, especially in August, and they didn't, because the Orioles have been, you know, basically the exact same record as the Yankees dating back since June 1st. I think the Orioles are like 42-40 since June 1st, and the Yankees are 39-39. Neither team has pulled away in either direction, but the Yankees had a really good opportunity in August, and they didn't take advantage. Now the Orioles are playing 3 games against the White Sox. I assume, you can only assume, that they are going to sweep the White Sox. And that's three wins on their schedule. The Yankees are playing Texas. Texas has been playing well lately. So, you know, by the time the series ends, you're heading into the weekend against the Cubs. The Cubs have been the best team in baseball over the past couple of weeks now. You know, the Yankees could be several games down in the division going into the series next week against Kansas City. And Kansas City's obviously playing for something too. So, you know, we may be talking next week about a huge missed opportunity that the Yankees didn't cash in on just because of how inconsistent they have been. And it's really only their faults to blame. There's no one else to blame but themselves, because they had an easy schedule in August and they didn't take advantage of it.
The 2024 season in a nutshell. I mean, the one thing that I will add before we go to break in the mailbag is they're very fortunate that Baltimore also didn't take advantage when the Yankees like basically nosedive in the middle of the summer. Like, Baltimore kept them around for this to be a race, because when they had that terrible stretch when it was like 6-22 or whatever, like, Baltimore didn't do their job either. So the Yankees definitely had some luck on their side, but they kind of squandered it in August. So we'll see what happens in September. But I just think the urgency thing is a problem. And I think it just like impacts day-to-day performance in a lot of ways that I just find like not acceptable for a team that's trying to win a championship.
Totally agree with you. The one point I wanted to make about Baltimore is, to me, it is pretty impressive of just how well overall they've played, considering how many injuries they've had this year. You know, when you lose basically your entire starting rotation and you still have the opportunity of winning the best division in baseball, like, they do deserve some credit. Like, I get they haven't pulled away, but they should be worse than what they are currently. And I do think it's a testament to like how much talent they have, because I think at this point they're down like four starters. They've lost pieces in their bullpen. They didn't have Felix Bautista, their, you know, top of the line closer all year, who's recovering from Tommy John. They definitely deserve credit. They don't have Jordan Westford, Ryan Mountcastle. Kerstedt still has a concussion from getting hit in the head with Clay Holmes' sinker. Like, he's been out. So I do think it's impressive just how they have treaded water, because we could be saying the same thing about the Yankees in 2023, but they didn't. They fell on their faces when Judge got hurt. So I do think that they deserve some credit. And, you know, as they get more whole, I do think that the Orioles could be a problem, but I don't know how much more whole they're getting before October.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I will say that the league being down also helped them in general, because if this was like a normal year, I think they would have got buried at this point. Like, that, I think everybody in some form or fashion is benefiting from other teams just not being as good as they have been in the past. So I agree with you. But I also think things have, if there was a year for you to like go through a season like that, it's probably this one, you know, just because everybody's kind of keeping you in it. Like,
yep.
You know, all right, we'll be back with the mailbag. Okay, we're back. It's mailbag time. We're going to start with William Moss. Hey, guys, love the pod. First time, long time. Given the penalties for spending, can the Yankees get a pick for a rookie of the year? Did Wells qualify on the necessary preseason prospect rankings list? If so, what do you think his chances are of jumping over Kowser to win rookie of the year? It feels like the Yankees aren't playing him enough. With this in mind,
yes, they would get a PPI pick. Basically, if you have a player who was on the top 100 prospects list out of two of the three major publications, and you've made the team coming out of opening day, you would get a pick. the Yankees would qualify with Wells because he was a top 100 prospect. And I think his chances of winning the award are pretty good right now, honestly. Like, if he continues to hit the way he has, his defense has been good. You know, Cowser definitely has the games played on Wells, but with him being, with Wells being a catcher, with him performing well, I certainly think the opportunity is there for him and the Yankees to benefit. I think Wells has been fantastic. I think he has certainly established himself as one of the best catchers, not only in the American League, but all of baseball. Like, he's been that good. So it would definitely be a big boost for the Yankees if he ended up winning Rookie of the Year, because they would get that additional first round pick next year.
Yeah, I didn't think Wells was going to win a couple of weeks ago, because I just thought that they were doing the platoon thing way too much. I just didn't think that he was going to play enough. But I mean, if this past weekend is any indication, it feels like they're going to play Wells way more. We'll see, though. I mean, I just don't trust Boone enough, to be quite honest, when it comes to this stuff, to feel like he'll play enough to beat Cowser, but we'll see. I hope he wins, but I still have my doubts, not because of Wells, but his playing time.
Yeah, I mean, they're tied right now in F4. Wells is at 3-4. Cowser's at 3-4. You know, Wells benefits with Ward just because of the fact that he's a catcher, and
he's defense, a catcher, right?
You know, defense goes, I mean, defense is huge for catchers, and you know, he's been really good. He's played 95 games this year. Cowser is at 130. Wells has a 121 WRC. Cowser's at 118. I don't know if voters, I'm not voting for Rookie of the Year. I'm voting for Manager of the Year this year, but I'm interested to see if voters, you know, ding Wells at all for only playing 95 games, and Cowser's at 130. He may end up with, Cowser may end up close to 150. I don't know how voters are going to feel about that. Obviously, Wells can't play every day because he's a catcher, but right. You know, there is a big gap there. I'd be interested to see if they give Cowser the award just because, you know, he is basically an everyday player.
Yeah, I also wonder if the division race will kind of seep into the back of people's minds as well.
Yep.
Steven Tidings, views from 314 feet OG. We've obviously got a full month of play before the playoffs and whatever that brings, but how much does that July 14th loss in Baltimore loom right now? They kind of had a bit of everything that's going wrong for the Yankees with Volpe's struggles, Verdugo doing Lord knows what, and Holmes' shakiness. In addition, losing that game means they need to sweep Baltimore in the season's final week in order to get that all-important tiebreak. It also changed the potential narrative entering the second half, focusing on everything wrong rather than a great come-from-behind win, for whatever that's worth. Particularly after the August malaise meant the Yankees squandered a decent chance to create separation with the O's as they went through a tough stretch, I think back to that game a decent amount. As an aside, was very encouraged with what we saw from Rizzo today. Don't want to think about the rest of the game, but nice to see him look normal. Enjoy the pod and your work as always. Yeah, I think about that game way more than I should. I think that was, I know people were trying to say, oh, every game is treated like it's the worst game of the year. That was the worst loss of the year. Like, just because of the ramifications, how it came about, the how it's still influencing what's happening today. That was a very bad loss. And I think that, you know, there is a pretty decent chance that we can look back at that loss and say that it really changed things for the Yankees. And at the very least, their playoff positioning and the road that they have when they get to October.
I think that's the biggest game of the season so far. Just because of the ramifications of it. You know, if the Yankees and Orioles finish with the same record, if they end up not sweeping in September, that game is huge, because if they win that game and it's just a regular game that they came from behind, Ben Rice hits that homer in the ninth, they had all the momentum in the world, they end up winning that game, you know, they only have to win two of three against the Orioles, which is more, it's definitely a bigger possibility of that happening rather than sweeping a good team. I get it's at home, you know, the environment is going to be, it's going to be loud in that series, but sweeping any team is a challenge for sure. Besides the White Sox, you should be sweeping the White Sox.
Yes.
Right. But yeah, that's a huge, huge game because now you do have to sweep an Orioles team that is good. And if they don't, I can see this division going down to the very end. They could certainly finish with the same record at this point. And that game could end up being the difference between playing in the wild card series and getting a bye into the ALDS.
That game will stay with me even past the season because it was just ridiculous. Like, it was just like a comedy of errors. And I think just represents my feelings about Alex Verdugo. Like, that, I think the faceplant image is just the perfect encapsulation of the Alex Verdugo experience in 2024 as a New York Yankee, in my opinion. So that's that. Jeffrey Barnes. Hi, Chris and Randy. The Yankees went 21-7 in May, a .750 winning percentage. Outside of that outlier month, they are 58-51, a .532 winning percentage, and a 4-full-month and change sample size. A .532 win percentage for the whole season will leave them outside of the last wild card spot as the season stands today. Are the Yankees more of a mediocre team buoyed by one outlier strong month and not a true contender? And is the front office misjudging the strength of the roster, leading to a lack of urgency in certain decisions? Too many at-bats for DJ Verdugo, not promoting Dominguez, et cetera. I want to answer this first because this has nothing to do with the question or with Jeffrey. This is just like my general opinion of stuff like this. I understand the logic behind the question, and I understand like trying to look at trends, so I'm not like downplaying that. I'm not disputing that. I totally get it. But for me personally, I can't separate the good month from the rest of them and then say it's an outlier. Like, it probably is an outlier. I'm not really going to like debate that or question that. But like, that month took place. That month counts as much as the other months. So like, it's the same thing when people say, well, if you take Judge and Soto out of the lineup, you can't take Judge and Soto out of the lineup. They acquired, drafted, developed Judge. They acquired Juan Soto. They wear the jerseys. They play every day. I'm not going to take them out because they're so much better than everybody. Like, that month existed. Like, they did go 21-7. There is a record of it. It took place. Like, it happened. So, do I think the Yankees are playing as well as they did in May? Absolutely not. Do I think that they're a title contender in 2024? Yes, I do. I think that they can win the World Series this year. Do I know what the hell is going on from day to day? Absolutely not. Nobody does at this point. I have no clue. None of us do. Like, are they inconsistent as hell? Is it frustrating? Absolutely. I'm a almost absurdly positive fan, and I don't think I've criticized this team more in the last than I have this year than the other years, like the last 5 or 6 years. And I thought 21 was a terrible year, and I think I've criticized them more this year than any other year because it's maddeningly frustrating. I get it, but I don't think that they're a mediocre team buoyed by one good month. Like, I think that they're a good team that plays inconsistently like the rest of the league. I just think that's where we are as a league. I'm saying it as if I'm in it, but I'm not. But that's where Major League Baseball is right now. You can say the same thing for pretty much every contender. Everybody's all of a sudden talking about the Astros. They were terrible for the first half, and they're really only making the playoffs because their division stinks. And we said that like in May or June that the division is going to keep them in the race and get them to the playoffs. The Dodgers, with all the money that they spent, they're not having a season they should have. The Orioles, the injuries have certainly been a part of it, but like, it's not like they pulled away and are going to win 100 games. Nobody's winning 100 games. So I think the Yankees are one of those good teams, like the other good teams, that have just been inconsistent. And I guess the parity of baseball or whatever is happening this year has kind of like watered down things. But I certainly don't think they're mediocre. I mean, they have like the best offense statistically in baseball. You can't be that mediocre when you have like that production. So it's just like my general feeling about like just taking certain parts and then saying, well, you're not good because this outlier happened or you're not as good as that. I just think that they're inconsistent. And also, I will say this. I do think this is valid. And other people have brought this up. They know they're making the playoffs. So I think part of the thing when we talk about urgency is also knowing you're making the playoffs and this belief that it's a crapshoot. And I do think that that factors in sometimes with them. I don't agree with it, but I do think that that's like a legit thing that happens with the Yankees because the GM has talked about this multiple times.
Yeah, I don't really have much else to add. I think you certainly covered it. I don't think they're a mediocre team. I think they're a frustrating team. But being frustrating doesn't mean that you can't win the title. The Rangers were very frustrating last year, and they won the title. Like, they had a below 500 record against teams who were 500 or better. The Yankees don't have that this year. Like, the Yankees have been really good against 500 or better teams. But that also doesn't necessarily mean that the Yankees are winning the title. That stat doesn't really have any correlation to how well you perform in the playoffs. I was actually looking at that stat yesterday. I think the 2021 Braves were 31-38 against teams 500 or better. They ended up winning the title. So, like, the regular season and the postseason are like two totally different entities, and it's really difficult to say what actually matters when it comes to having success in the postseason. Like, even though the Yankees are very inconsistent, the fact that their lineup is as good as it is could certainly carry them to a title. Like, if Judge and Soto are performing at their levels currently, they have enough to win it all. But again, it doesn't mean that that will be the reason why they win, or if Judge and Soto don't perform well, it doesn't mean that they still can't win the title. Like, the playoffs are so bizarre sometimes that there are certain things that influence whether or not you do win or you don't win. So, you know, just because what we've seen over these past few months hasn't been good, again, it doesn't necessarily mean that's going to carry over into October.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're warning you guys, it's going to be a crapshoot and you just got to buckle up and get ready for the stress that comes along with it. I mean, I think that's basically what's going to happen unless somebody emerges in September, but can't really predict that at this point. I think it's just going to be a wild playoffs and it'll be fun. And then if the Yankees win, it'll be super fun. If not, it'll just be excruciatingly painful. And then we'll all move on with our lives. So, Abigail Johnston, hello again. Long time, second time. I feel there are at least two obviously bad calls by a third base coach every week. The bullpen management hasn't helped the obviously weak part of the team. No surprise development, and any of the pitchers have stuck around. Verdugo's allergic sores from his batting gloves weren't even spotted until a teammate caught it. Is this a zero war coaching staff? How can they keep him around? I'm assuming that him means Boone around at this point. Thanks. I'll hang up and listen. I don't think that they're a zero war coaching staff. I have my criticisms of them, but they do have the best record in the American League and are going to the playoffs and have a chance to win the title. So, I mean,
also as far as like winning percentages go in the regular season, Boone's been one of the best managers in baseball history. If we're just talking about the objective is to win, he has been one of the best managers in baseball history. Whether or not you agree that he is one of the best managers in baseball, statistically, he has been one of the best managers in regular season history. Now, there's definitely some things that he's done over the past few years in the postseason that has impacted the success of the team in October. I think the main example that I have right away is starting J-Hap. I mean, starting Davey Garcia. I still don't understand that move. It was certain. It obviously didn't, you know, go the Yankees' way, but that is an example of like why. Like why are you overthinking that to that degree? But I think the as a whole, again, the Yankees, as you said, they have the best record in the American League. They're going to the playoffs. Again, what we just said in the last answer doesn't mean that they're going to win the World Series. They could definitely get bounced in the Wild Card Series. Anything that happens in October at this point, with what we've seen, I would not be surprised.
Right. I fully expect Aaron Boone to get in another contract with the Yankees and be the manager for the next 3 or 4 years at least. I mean, I don't think he's going anywhere. I don't think they want somebody else. Aaron Boone's not going anywhere.
I also just don't know who they would target or be interested in if they parted with Boone. I do think that, though, with him having a club option for next season, I do think that some postseason success is needed for him, because at some point like, you have to do something different. Mm-hmm. So I do think that he does have to have some level of postseason success. I'm not saying he has to win the World Series, but you know, if they get bounced in the Wild Card Series, they lose the division, Orioles win it, they lose that series against Baltimore in late September in some crazy fashion, they head into October, you know, limping, and then they get bounced. You know, I do think at some point, like, you have to do something different, but I just also don't know, like, who is the guy that is waiting in the wings to be the next Yankees manager? Maybe there's a person out there who, like, we're not thinking of, or I don't think it's anyone currently on the staff. I would be curious, though, of, like, who would be their top option. It's not right. Don Mattingly.
No. Well, it's thank you, Posada. Everybody.
It's not Posada. Like, every fan wants Posada to manage. Like, no. Like, Cheater, no.
I know that for a fact. That you guys can stop talking about Jeter and the Yankees manager or general manager is not happening.
Yeah, so I would be curious to know, like, who would be the guy.
Well, thank you, everyone, for your mailbag questions. We appreciate it. We got some other ones, but for the sake of time, we can't get to them right now. But we recognize them. Jerkface, we saw your email. And also, Ben Gardner, we saw your question about Jason Dominguez's eligibility. I think we covered most of that earlier. So, Chris, before we get out of here, final thoughts?
No, I don't have any thoughts right now in my head. I'm completely empty.
Sounds good. I don't have any thoughts either. So, thank you for supporting the podcast. Thanks for checking us out. We have some news in the future, so we will announce that soon when it comes to the podcast. So be on the lookout for that, and we will speak to all of you next week.